morning and welcome to this session on change, and specifically change in the context of renovating the finance function. You may have noticed that the room looks a little different to what it was before, and perhaps different to the last room you were in. That's quite deliberate, because whilst we have our expert here, who I'm about to introduce, we also want to capitalise on the wisdom in the room. So I know every session you've been to, people have promised that it's going to be interactive, which normally makes a few questions at the end. We actually want this to be a conversation to, as I said, leverage the wisdom which is in the room. So you'll notice that we're using some flip charts. If we're going to have a conversation, it'll be a little stilted because we still need to record this for the benefit of all the people who miss out. And so we will need to wait for the microphone for your comments. So that's the only practical thing I want to warn you about. We will need to keep time because we're aware, we're already warned, we've got to get to lunch on time for the senator. And I'll need... I'll come whichever way you want. Has had it, yeah. You might just turn yours off for a little moment. Give me 30 seconds more.
No,
mine's off. So I will be keeping to time. I'm sure that the audience won't need as much guidance for that as our expert, enthusiastic guest speaker. So if you feel I'm giving her a hard time, that's because she told me to. So without any further ado, Beth has always been passionate about developing high-performing teams. She's always been interested in overcoming what she calls self-limiting mindsets. In her current role, she's the head of finance transformation. She's been successful in changing the way that finance operates at MLC, leading the function towards, let's underline towards, the vision of being world-class. And she believes that every actuary needs to have an understanding of the important subject of adaptive change. Please welcome Beth Lawson.
Hello? Yeah, that's working now. All right, you guys aren't going to be able to see, so you need to come over here. And you guys need to come up here, please, the three of you. Excellent. Just because... Yeah, no, sorry. we're going to talk amongst each other. So first, you may have noticed that the room's a little bit different and music was on and whatnot because we are trying to make this a different session than all the other sessions we go to. Ground rules for today is any answer is a good answer. Participate. And build on the last person's comments. And what I mean by that is, as actuaries and the finance function at MLC has a lot of accountants as well, which are pretty much the same in that we have a real strength in critical thinking, which then means when someone else is talking, we're thinking, okay, I don't like that. That one's good. That point's not good. That point's good. That point's not good. And I'm thinking about my next answer instead of building on what the last person said. And we're really good at thinking of the next answer. And we're really good at, yeah, but. And what we've been working on at MLC is instead of, yeah, but, yeah, and. Right? So actually building on the last person's comments. And my own pet peeve on these conferences is when someone from the floor says, and I'd like to raise a question to the room. And then the next person says, and I think something completely different, which has nothing to do with what the question the person just raised was. So I don't want that to happen in this session because we can all build on each other. And in my role as transformation, just in case you're saying what on earth is that, because going to barbecues, you know, I'm an actuary, what on earth is that? And then, oh, I'm transformation, I thought it would be better. And, oh, wow, so what exactly do you do? So it didn't really help, unfortunately, from the barbecue point of view, so I'm kind of hoping my next role might have a better, easier barbecue title. So with the, what I wanted to talk to, what I wanted to first set today is my expectations of the session, which is that each of you walk out of here with the idea that you will change something in the way you approach change. Let me try that again. That you'll do something differently when you walk out of this room in the way you approach change. And that's my main objective. The other one is to get everybody to participate, so we'll see how that goes. And what I most want to do is talk about the idea of adaptive change, so I don't know how many of you looked at the paper. But before we do that, I want you to talk to each other in groups of two or three about why you chose to come to the session. See, I've pre-populated the little thing. Why did you choose to come to this session, and what do you expect to get out of it? So you have 2 minutes. Okay, so I want to hear from you guys on, does anybody want to share either why they came here or why someone they talked to has came to this session? Yeah?
We were saying that this was by far the most impressive of all the sessions. Is that good enough?
I used to work for Phil, so...
I was going to say that I think it was the one title which guaranteed there were going to be no formulae presented.
So it's up to you to make this not so boring then. And what do you expect to get out of it? What did you guys hear from each other?
Some new ideas. I've been trying to change accountants, actuaries and investment people for years and I've failed every time.
I hear where you're coming from. Anybody else? Anything different to that? Because it's a check-in to make sure.
Just making change effective. Like you said in your presentation, I mean, you know, you can go through the mechanics of it and that doesn't necessarily change things, but how do you actually make it stick? How do you make sure it's sort of enduring?
Yeah, and I'm not proposing to have all the answers, but we have had some success at MLC, and I've learned a lot in the role I've been doing, and that's why I thought it might be interesting to have this presentation. Okay, so where we're going to start, and I will have to use the, because of the technology and whatnot, I'll use the PowerPoint for a second. Is this concept of adaptive change? And I'll use this mic. Is that okay? Can you guys all see?
Yeah.
I did a leadership course a couple of years ago that when this concept came up, it just really spoke to me. And I thought, that's why people, when so many people have great ideas and they don't go to fruition, right? That's why, because it's in a lot of changes are actually adaptive changes rather than technical change. So a technical change is what most of us think of as change, right? I'm a problem solver. I'm really good at it. I've got a problem. I'm going to solve it, and I'm going to change it. But an adaptive change is where it requires a mindset shift and or a shift in values. And that means multiple things need to be addressed. And so if you require that, you have to approach it differently. So one of the examples we've had recently at MLC is we changed the reporting platform from Cognos to Business Objects, right? Technical change, you change the reporting platform, you move all the reports from Cognos onto Business Objects, everyone starts using Business Objects. No, that's not the way it happened, because everybody had heard stories about how, Business Objects doesn't work quite the same as Cognos. Well, no, it doesn't. And it's not going to work for my report. So there was all this underlying value towards Cognos, which Cognos is not supported anymore. So there's like a real reason for the business that has to change. Plus, we had Business Objects was being used by the NAB, so, you know, big parents using it, so we may as well use it. Of course, now since then they've moved on to something else. But anyway, you know, as these things occur. But because of the way we approached it, it's taken 2 years to get that people using Business Objects. Now, one way would have been, on this date, Cognos is gone. We're removing it from the thing and forcing people to use Business Objects. We didn't quite take that approach because there were certain sort of key reports and whatnot. But because we approached it as a technical problem, we missed the opportunity to embed that change quicker. And we often mistakenly try to apply a technical solution to an adaptive change and wonder why it didn't work. And why do I think this is so important is because if we don't identify it as an adaptive change, which means you've got to do something different and talk to people and get more people involved, possibly get external facilitation and whatnot, then we all get frustrated and the change doesn't stick. And every actuary would be so much more effective if we understood it better and we were better implementing. Even the smallest changes, like a change in spreadsheet, might mean you can't just change the spreadsheet and bang, it's fixed. Sometimes it can. Great, technical change. But a lot of the changes actually are adaptive. And then knowing the kind of things you need to think about will make us all more successful. So now that's the concept. Are there any kind of questions on that? Does that make sense? Does that resonate with you? Kind of makes sense. So now back talking in your little groups, what I thought is everybody has examples of change that worked well or didn't work well. And can you talk a little bit about an example from your experience of adaptive change? So where people had to change their mindset or values. And there's even the common example of going from an individual contributor to a people leader, where you have to shift your values if you're going to be an effective people leader, right? You no longer can, it's not all about your efforts, and if it's all about your efforts, then your team is left behind, right? So you have to change your values to be able to think that actually the time I spend coaching and explaining and teaching the team members is just as valuable as the time I spend fixing this model, coming up with the answer, making it all work. So, an example, if you can come up with your own examples of, in your working life, of adaptive changes, what did you see worked well or didn't work well? And what are the kinds of things that make adaptive change work? And if you don't have any examples of where it actually worked well, then go with those that it didn't work well, because there's usually plenty of those. Okay, if you want to talk to each other first for 3 minutes and then we'll share. Okay, so do we want to do a bit of sharing? You guys are doing so well sharing with each other, but might be good to share with the whole room. Anybody have a really good example? Or they heard a really good example?
Thanks, Mark Schneider. It's not my example, but it's one that Darren Robinson mentioned yesterday in our presentation. Darren's been working with his team to automate the actuarial processes, which I would call a technical change, but he's taken on the adaptive change element as well, or as he called it, a cultural change. And by involving the staff in the technical change and getting them implementing part of it, it became theirs. And the adaptive part of it is that they are now keen to add value in other ways. So the technical change allowed them to do things more efficiently, and the adaptive part was that they are now coming up with good ideas on how to build on that and how to take the efficiency further. So it was started with a technical change, but he made a very conscious effort to bring in the cultural and adaptive part with it, and that it certainly worked for him.
Sorry, Mark, do you know if he thinks it was quicker in the long run?
I think not only quicker, but certainly added a lot more value. And now his team are being asked to help in other parts of the organization because they've seen what happened. So I think he very firmly believes in that adaptive or cultural part alongside the technical piece.
Any other good examples? That's a great example, actually. Yeah, absolutely.
So your reaction to Mark's comment raised an interesting question, which is the thing about speed. Because one of the my observations is people are so keen, they're over keen to bring about change, and that speed is the enemy in a lot of that case. So if you regard speed of change as the judge of success, I think quite often that's when you shortcut all of these adaptive and cultural changes.
That was Meredith. I might let you do the audience and I'll keep the mic. That's a really good question, because I think that a truly effective change often is slower in the beginning, but then it's embedded in the end. Whereas if you do the quick, it's quick whilst it's in everybody's scorecards and whilst there's a lot of focus on it, but it doesn't have legs to stick and continue. Another example? Yeah.
We were just talking about CRM systems, embedding the CRM system. I think everyone knows that a CRM system is not a system change, it's a cultural change. And even just as we were discussing, one of the things that occurred to me that we managed, I think, to slowly bring everyone along with all the benefits of implementing it, except the sales team. And I think sales teams are notoriously difficult. And it struck me as being... we probably needed to be more intelligent about the remuneration system that went along with that. So I think it's quite common for, we're talking about qualitative bonus, brownie points for doing the right thing type stuff. But we probably needed to expand our frame of reference, if you like, to think about the whole remuneration structure of the sales team to get away from this is my client, not our client type thinking. I think it's a very common problem.
Has anybody else tried to do something like that and solved that issue? Jenny.
We're facing exactly that issue at the moment with the sales owning the client, and I think hearing what Meredith said and also hearing about the changing natural process, it strikes me the most important thing is to address the what's in it for me question. And the issue that we have, or that I have actually in Japan, is most of my staff don't know what they want. So you try and talk about what's in it for me, and if they're only there to just do a job, it's very hard to find what the driver is to get them to change.
Yeah, and does anybody else have that problem that some people don't talk, so you don't know what they really want? Yeah? On the leadership course I went, someone was talking about strategic thinking, and that's often why you don't get the next level role, is you're told, oh, you need to work on your strategic thinking. And someone asked a question from the audience on, oh, well, how do I get a word in edgewise? I work with all these marketing and salespeople, and how do I get them to stop talking, and then I can put my view across? And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, that's not my problem. I don't have that problem at all. My problem is, how do I get everyone to talk, right? We're sitting, and this is a perfect environment where you are not going to want to talk, right? Especially into a microphone. Yuck. Yeah? So but even in a team meeting, how do you get everybody to talk? And something my husband told me years ago that he discovered, sorry about that feedback, I don't know how to get rid of it, but is that studies show that if you don't get people to talk in the first 5 minutes of the session, they will not talk the whole time. Right? So things like check-in and just even saying your name, at least they've talked once, right? Which is part of the reason I get you to talk to each other, is not so much because you want to talk into the mic, but at least you're starting to talk. Any other examples? How are we going for time, Martin? I got a couple minutes. I want to... just, I don't know if any of you guys looked at it, but in the presentation there are some elements that I think are important for adaptive change, and there's quite a few. And maybe I'm just curious with what Meredith and Jenny were talking about in terms of that, how you get the sales force on board, and that who owns the client. You know, working for a bank, that's a huge thing from the bank's point of view. Is it personal bank or business bank or private bank and wholesale bank, and who actually owns a client? But the these are some of the elements that I think you need to address every time you have an adaptive change. Now, some of them are very related, like mindset and values, but there's a difference between someone having the mindset of, I need to show that I can do it myself, right? So you give them a task. This is a lot of our junior actuaries are like this. You give them a task. They say, right, sweet, I run with it. And their mindset is, I need to prove that I'm good. So they'll spend 3 hours. The 3 hours goes to a day. All of a sudden, it's 2 days. And if they had come and asked one person 5 minutes at the start, the whole thing would have been solved in maybe half an hour, right? And it's that whole concept of, how do you do things smarter, not harder? And a mindset of, but you won't view me as any good if I just ask the person next to me. And I can say, actually, no, I see that as very good, as asking the person next to you, because you're doing it faster. Process is an interesting one, because in finance, and in, and I imagine you guys think the same, similar way, accountants and actuaries, we don't have any processes. What are you talking about? We're professionals. We have judgments. We problem solve, but we don't have any processes. Right. Okay. So every year you do 24 sets of financial statements. You have monthly reporting. You have all this sort of stuff, things you do regularly. Oh, yeah, but that's not a process. Right? And that's a mindset of, that's the way it is because I'm a professional. How, process is something that the admin people do, and the and service, right? And maybe accounts payable, but we offshore that, so the processes happen in our world, Bangalore. But in fact, if you can change the mindset where people start realizing that even giving strategic advice is a process, then everybody's doing it better, and the customer is getting a more similar experience each time. Because the and that's something that we've been working on at MLC. Are we perfect? No. Are we world class? No. But that's our vision of where we're heading. And the way in which I tried to go about changing that mindset is through involvement. So this is exactly what you were saying, Mark, that the if you get the people involved and get them to solve it and to come up with the answers, it's so much more embedded, and it starts taking on its own flow. And communication, look, every organization can always do communication better. But if you're not thinking about how you communicate it, you've missed it, right? There's no way you're getting that adaptive change. You're going to get that adaptive change through and to stick. And culture behaviors, like I talked about in the start, that add to is a bit of a cultural thing, and how you behave and people turning off their BlackBerries at meetings. Is anybody working at an organization where everyone takes their BlackBerries and they're checking it all the time? I was told by my husband's cousin is a lawyer, and she worked in New York for a while. She said she goes to meetings where everybody has their laptops. I'm flabbergasted by that. But anyway, that's, I don't, you know, multitask, but. That's right. So what kind of things, let's just pick one. Let's pick involvement. So what are the kinds of things you need to think about if you want to actually get people involved? So it's easy to say, I got the staff involved, but what actually do you need to do? Do you know what they did, Mark? Oh, sorry.
Susan. I think you need to have a mindset where you're prepared to take on what your staff are going to suggest. Because it could, you don't want to be in a situation where you've got a preconceived solution and you're just doing this as a matter of form. Mm. So you have to, and they have to understand that they are actually going to be contributing something. So you involve them in coming up with a solution and you're prepared to take on what they've suggested.
Absolutely.
And I think related to that, one of the issues I've found is one of time. I think with people, with process, you can fill in your day with that. And if you don't actually say that you know, adapting to change and providing the time to be able to do that is a really important part of someone's role, then they just get bogged down in the process. And they might even not perceive this process as you were suggesting, but it just tends to fill up whatever space you give it.
Mm. Very true.
We found that we actually got the staff involved in those projects, but you actually need to give a framework in which they're operating in, because particularly for junior staff, they need that guidance. They want the framework there to give them some sort of structure, but without inhibiting their ideas and their involvement.
Mm.
Specific about how you got them involved in that?
Yeah.
In our situation, Jenny Dean from Aon, and we actually outsourced our administration, so our division fully restructured. So we needed to take a more outward approach and go back to our consulting roots. So we actually ran a strategy day where everyone, all the way down to the actual assistants, got to attend, and to get them talking, we used, you know, just the flip charts around the room, and they got to do the full SWOT analysis and prioritise where they thought our strengths were and what project we should focus on. Mm. And we even made then the project managers, not the leaders. The leaders were still the actuaries to do the guidance, but they actually owned the projects. And going back to that speed issue, normally you think of a project, you know, a 6-month time frame. It's a year and a half when we've just launched some of those projects. But the whole energy in the area and the fact that we had a whole series of new ideas that they're coming up with all the time now shows that taking that time to actually do those projects properly means that the spirit of the team is completely different. Mm.
That's a great example. Thank you for asking her to expand on that. That's really, really interesting. Martin, how are we going for time?
Perhaps one more line of comments before we go to the phone stuff.
Yep. Is there anything missing up there?
Ian Pereira, I was just wondering if measurement is a component of successful adaptive change.
That's it.
Because I think, unless you know whether you've done it or not, that's hard, and certainly some sort of measurement keeps you on track.
Now that's a really good point. I have fluctuated between measurement and not measuring, because as actuaries and accountants, you can get quite, you really want the numbers, right? And I'll focus on the numbers. So you send out surveys and you don't actually talk to people. So there needs to be a combination of the talking to people, because the survey only gets you so far. But this is the thing when it's difficult to measure. It can be difficult to measure. We try to do a whole bunch of surveys, and you know, one of our measurements is how many people fill in the surveys. It tells us how engaged people are, or how much better we're getting at getting people to fill in the survey. That's a really good point.
But this might be a good time to talk about what you were trying to achieve with finance function. How some of those elements might fit, because some people
would tend
to want to hear specifically around the finance.
Yep. So I'm just going to go to the slide on this. All right. So from these are my thoughts as opposed to MLC's thoughts in terms of what a finance function could look like. But when I sit there and say, well, what do I want finance to be able to do? And these are accountants and actuaries. All deliverables on time and accurate, not, oh, geez, we just found that other claims file, which means our disability reserve is completely different to what we said last month. Training new employees is easy, and they can come up to speed quickly. So you've got things documented. It's quick and easy for people to move roles and for people to come into those roles. Okay. Oh, are we? No. Oh, right. Everyone's thinking of ways to improve, right, themselves. So they're in a position where they're developing themselves as well as the way they do things and the organization as a whole. So they have a mindset towards the bottom line of the whole organization, not their particular silo. And what I'd love to see is that the whole of the finance function is actually able to focus on the possibilities of what we could do rather than the issues. Because every week there's a different issue, and there's a different, especially if you work for a big organization, there's a different issue. With small organizations, the big issues might be regulation and whatnot. But the...
For example, issues versus possibilities.
For example, rather than the example of the disabled lives reserve has now increased by 10 million and it's an issue we now need to deal with and now we need to engage our stakeholders. I would, if everything was working sweet, I would love for the actuaries to be spending their time thinking on the possibilities of how they might be able to holistically manage disabled lives with the claims people, with the numbers they have, and actually be giving insights to the business in terms of where that could head. So it's really, if you look across the top line, it's really moving actuaries and accountants in the finance function being seen as a cost center. So a lot of organizations, that's what it's seen. Well, we have to have finance because that Life Act tells us we have to have an actuary and we have to have accountants who'll sign off the accounts and whatnot, to a valued partner, which would have been a big goal to me a couple of years ago. But now my thinking's evolved to actually, well, we should be a decision maker. Now, not necessarily everyone in the finance function, but everyone in the finance function supporting the leaders so they're at the table making the decision. They're not just an advisor. We're actually part of the decision. So we're part of the decision maker. So that's really, in my mind, what world class looks like, is that we're actually decision makers. So all the stuff we do and all the people involved in the finance function realize that their work is helping to make decisions for the organization, not just because APRA tells us we have to make those returns and ASIC says we have to do our accounts this way and that sort of stuff. Does anybody have any comments on that vision?
Hi, Andrew Dale. Sometimes when I've spoken to actuaries in organisations, I've sort of encouraged the line of thinking of assume that you're effectively an external consultant providing services to these parts of the organisation. And if you were structuring that, what would you have in terms of client engagement and outcomes, and how would you measure success and client satisfaction and all those sorts of things? And then just apply the sort of framework that you would if you're an external consultant to being an internal consultant. So do you get feedback from your internal clients on feedback and getting mechanisms and how you could improve. Ultimate question would be, for example, if you're delivering services, would they actually pay for the services? And so if you get to the stage of being a pay partner, would they actually pay for the services?
That's a really good test. Chris.
Chris Johnson. I think everyone thinking of ways to improve is a very important part of both adaptive change and any sort of change you're trying to make to a function or a company or even a little team. Mm. When I ran a team of accountants a long time ago, performance agreement was specifically, I think, 20% of whatever their total calculation was ways of improving things. They had to come up with 15 ways of improving things. They couldn't just think, oh, no. They had to be big things. They couldn't be little things. But they had the whole year to come up with them. And it was quite good because you could hound them and say, well, you haven't improved anything this week. And how are you going to... You're not going to be able to do 15 of them in the last week of the year. You have to sort of do them as you go along. And it wasn't just improving things in a technical work sense. It was improving the working environment as well. So how do we get our team to interact with other teams? How do we just make the general finance area more sociable? Because people sort of lived in their little worlds and didn't really interact much. Mm. And so I think that went really well, but I think I was an 18 when I was doing it.
And this is and then if it's in other people's scorecards, but their people leaders didn't value it, then well, you just kind of ignored that part of the scorecard and you gave them a score on everything else. And that's where leadership is so important, and getting everybody on the same page, because until you have that, until you have in my area, you have the finance leadership team. If all those people are not on the same page, all ships pointing in one direction. I saw Godfather 3 the other day again on Fox now. It doesn't work because they're pulling against each other, and they all have different agendas, which is that's often why the change doesn't stick, because you didn't have a buy-in at the top level, you didn't get the buy-in underneath that, and then surprise surprise, you're right back where you were 2 years ago or last year. Andrew? Oh, sorry.
I really support this vision, and I think that's something that we certainly try to do, because we do, I think, have a sort of judgment of disappointment who he or her, I say this all the time, is that we actually have to sell ourselves to the business all the time, so that we aren't just seen as a consultant. And we've actually had quite a lot of success actually getting out and talking to business, probably more than some of the other actuarial teams in our business, but it's, you actually have to keep valuing that effort to do. And actually, also when you're doing big projects, getting out and communicating. We tell the rest of the business, you know, for June, July, and August, don't come and talk to us within the SCR. And actually, now 20% of that project is actually going and talking to the business about what we've done. And the feedback that we get from that is enormous. Now that is, you know, very much value as a management tool for the whole business. So actually making sure that we invest that time.
Yeah, that's right. I think the common thing, especially when you're in the cost center space, is you're spending 90% of your time coming up with the numbers and 10% of your time maybe saying something about it. Whereas if you're in the decision maker space, you're spending 10% of your time coming up, everything's automated, the numbers just came straight out, and then 90% in the value adding, discussing, being part of those decisions.
But I'd love to say a chat, but that's the 5-minute signal. So if you'd like to do your wrap,
Yeah, so look, I just wanted to recap on some of the things that we did today to try to make this a little bit more of a discussion, and also to embed as much as we can the thinking around it and the thinking around what could you possibly do differently. So I started with a bit of music to set the scene, that it's a little bit different to some of the other sessions. The layout of the room is different, and we've had much more discussion than any of the other sessions that I've been in, so thank you all for participating in that. Setting the expectations, so kind of set at the front, this is what I want to happen, and luckily you guys all came on board with that. And the end in mind in terms of where we're heading, because often we end up in discussions where everybody's on a different page, and so it goes pear-shaped, and then and everybody feels disappointed and a waste of time, and it's just a lot of wasted energy. And Martin and I on the same page, so that means you have to plan beforehand. And we talked on the phone and met and discussed yesterday and today, and the running of the discussion, so that it is hard to get actuaries to talk. So what I have found is definitely when you get them to talk in small groups and then share, and it's not necessarily what I said, or that person said something really good, that helps a lot. Accountants are exactly the same. I don't think I'd have that problem with sales and marketing if I happened to move into that. And the final challenge. So what I was hoping is that some of you might, this is a very short session, I know, but to might be with share if there is one thing you're going to do differently when trying to do your next change, if you'd like to share that, or something you took out of this session. It's a really good point. And at my company, at MLC anyway, I run workshops like this, not necessarily about adaptive change, but I spend a lot of time planning the workshop before we do it. And I learned a lot from a really great facilitator at MLC on the kinds of things you can do to move the conversation forward. But yeah, that is the challenge. And it's that's why you get Chris doing that in his team and the other team's not coming on board. But yeah, again, I think you got to start with the leaders and everybody having the same objectives.
Anything else? Beth, I have to say I really enjoyed this session. It's been it's interesting. In fact, it's opened my eyes. I'm both an actuary and also involved in the financial planning business. And we've just put four separate financial planning firms together to create one large one. And we're going through a change to change those four planners or advisors to change their mindset to a new corporate mindset.
Mm.
And it's a real challenge.
Yeah. Fair enough. Anyone else? Two more. Got to get two more.
My challenge, and it's not a new challenge, and I hear it in everybody else that's spoken so far, is not to get frustrated.
Yeah.
I spend half my life saying, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in.
Yeah, that's right. Listening is a really important part of it. One last one.
I guess what I think of is just reminding myself to talk about change with my leadership team before just plunging into it.
So
have some of the sort of wider conversations about these sort of change issues rather than just hitting with the technical details of what needs to happen.
Yeah.
So that's really useful. But like that.
Thanks, Ian.
So I hope that you appreciate Beth's enthusiasm and passion for this subject. For me, the list of elements of adaptive change that Beth put up is a kind of scary list, really. And so what I took out of today was the message means we're implementing change. To be very conscious that we're not dealing with robots, we actually are dealing with people, and not only dealing with people, but dealing with diverse people that need to be brought along. So please join me in thanking Beth Wilson.